Hello and welcome along. This is the RT Rugby Podcast. Guinness Six Nations is back this week. Ireland are in Wales this Saturday at the Principality Stadium. And the big news is that Caelan Doris is unavailable. He picked up a knee injury in the recent win against Scotland 10 days ago. Ronan Kelleher also misses out, as does Tadhg Furlong, yet to feature in the tournament. So there will be two changes for Simon Easterby's side this week. And I'm joined by Bernard Jackman and Johnny Holland. Fellas, I'm going to start with a little bit of a quiz for you. Can you tell me what was the last Ireland game that Caelan Doris didn't play in?
42 tests ago, whatever that was.
Wow. Yeah.
Was it 41?
42 games in a row he's played. Started 41 of them.
When was it, Neil?
When was it? It was in 2021.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, because the amount of work he does as well, like the battering he takes and hands out, it's insane. And his consistency, it's ridiculous.
I can tell you as well, he played the full 80 in all but 9 of those 42 matches.
And then he goes back to Leinster a lot as well. Am I wrong there? That's by my eye, now. But like when he plays with Leinster, he's playing a lot as well. He doesn't seem to take as many rests as others. He's just a lot of miles on the clock, doesn't he?
No. So the last game he didn't play for Ireland, England, final game of the 2021 Six Nations. So if you actually think about it, that was the last game before what would have been the last Lions tour. He's fallen three games shy of playing every single game of a 4-year Lions cycle. To give you an illustration of how different the Ireland team is from that day, here's some of the names. Are like you've the back line, Hugo Keenan full back. On the wings were Keith Earls and Jacob Stockdale. James Lowe was out of the Ireland team at this stage. He'd been dropped. James Lowe was a dropped player this long ago. Robbie Henshaw and Bundiaki in the centres. Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray at the halfbacks. Front row, Dave Kilcoyne, Rob Herring, Tadhg Furlong, Ian Henderson, Tadhg Byrne, CJ Stander. CJ Stander's last game for Ireland was that day. Josh van der Fleer and Jack Conan. Among the replacements, bizarrely as well, two players weren't used off the bench. One of them was Jameson Gibson-Park.
Oh.
Imagine an Ireland team that didn't need to use Jameson Gibson-Park at all and could just leave him on the bench. It was this long ago. So, in fairness, when you do wonder, even thinking about someone like Gavin Coombs and Nick Timoney coming into the Ireland squad this week, and you're wondering, God, those two fellas really could and should have had a lot more Ireland caps. Well, 42 games in a row for Caelan Doris probably has eaten up a good few of caps for them. It is a remarkable record, and probably does focus the minds, Johnny, for what Ireland have this weekend.
Yeah, the idea of not letting anyone into your jersey, he took it way too far, didn't he? Yeah, it does focus the mind. You know, you mentioned at one stage, does it give a bit of focus to the team when there are injuries and you have to make a couple of changes? And I think, you know, you never want to have to make changes as a coach, I think, but like having, you know, someone coming in who's fighting for their spot and hasn't had that opportunity in a while. So you'll obviously get a bit of a reshuffle in that back row, but then someone will come onto the bench who hasn't had a chance, possibly. And I think that definitely gives the game an extra bit of bite. The complacency shouldn't really be there, because there will be a couple of changes where lads get to put their best foot forward. And I think when you're in that Ireland environment now, like you're thinking very much, biggest competition is probably inside at the moment, isn't it? Like, to try and get your spot on that team. It's not about getting a win against Wales, because if you play, they're expected to get a win, obviously. But if you get a win and don't play an 8 out of 10, you might not get your position back. Like, you know, so I definitely think the lack of complacency will be because of the competition within the squad.
It makes me wonder a little bit, Bernard, as well, that I just mentioned it. How would this Ireland team have looked or changed over the last couple of years if CJ Stander didn't retire when he did? Because he was only 31 at the time. It was a big surprise for him to retire when he did. It does make you wonder who would have missed out on what opportunities. That season, Jack Conan was obviously in the form of his life. He went on playing with the Lions. CJ Stander was playing 6 rather than 8. That was keeping Peter O'Mahony out of the team. How does his last few years look? Does Caelan Doris kind of get... Does he have to wait another couple of years to get that look in with Ireland if CJ Stander hadn't gone away? It is funny how these sliding doors moments pop up.
Yeah, and like at the time, we would have felt we would have missed CJ Stander badly. And look, he was a great player, and he retired at the peak of his powers. But there was others to step up, particularly in the back row. I think it's an area where We have so much depth. It's incredible. Some of the players who don't get the chance to even get into the match, not the match squad, the wider squad, who play well for the provinces every week. And we're very fortunate. Doris, I mean, when you listen to kind of some of the criticism out there that Ireland are kind of a dad's army team, and there's no real new faces. Within a relatively short space of time over people's careers, 10 years or 12 years of people's careers, there's a lot of fellas gone there, and a lot of new people come in. It's just we're quite consistent in our selection. I think once you get in and you keep playing well, which you couldn't argue against a lot of Andy Farrell's selections, and now obviously Easterbrees in over two games, is the players tend to step up and be 8 out of 10, and that's why Ireland are obviously consistently in the top 3 in the world. But for this week, where does it leave us? Obviously, you couldn't have a better like for like than Conan. Obviously, he's not like for like in terms of how they play, but in terms of a player who's played a lot of days, who's in unbelievable form, proven at Test level, British and Irish Lions Test starter. So that's not a problem. It's what changes are made, in around out of it. Obviously, McCarthy hopefully being back fit for selection, and then obviously we know that Furlong is ruled out, and Kelleher has a knock as well, which is it's pity because he's been in good form. So there's going to be some fresh voices in this match day 23. You would think there was probably going to be anyway, just by the nature of being a middle game and to reward some bench players. But it'll be an interesting selection when we hear about it tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point that Bernard was making there with the form that like Jack Conan and Dan Sheehan is obviously in as well, where but particularly around Caelan Doris being missing. I think if you were to look around most other countries around the world and you were to say to them, this weekend your captain who has played your last 42 matches is unavailable, I think a lot of teams might be scrambling around to figure out who are we actually going to put in here at number 8. But word got round on, was it Friday, Saturday night, that Caelan Doris probably wasn't going to be available for this game. And instantly, everyone just went, oh, yeah, that's Jack Conan in to start. No real worries. Obviously, Caelan Doris is going to be badly missed, but there isn't the slightest fear or worry about what Jack Conan's able to do this weekend.
Yeah, I think like even France with Gregory Aldridge, like if you were missing him, that's a big chunk of their back row, and like in the influence that he has. And I think Caelan Doris and him are very similar in how they impact the game of their national team, but if you were Wales and you're in the position you're in, I know there's a change and it might be a bit of a bounce with that, but realistically, how much bounce can you get and how much prep can you do within a week? I'm sure he's going to that in a minute, but if you're going, oh thank God, Caelan Doris is out, and then you go, well, Jack Conan, who was beating the door down for a start anyway, he just gets a start, and then they have plenty of others to fill that six role, like with Joe McCarthy coming back, does Tadhg Byrne go to six? Does Pete stay at six? Will Ryan Baird get another chance at six? Will Nick Timoney, Cavan Coombs, will they come onto the bench? There's so much options there that it just doesn't get any easier for Wales.
Well, speaking of Nick Timoney, Gavin Coombs, and what happens with the bench, that is something I've been thinking about this week, and I was wondering about it as well during the Autumn Nations series, where when Jack Conan Bernard obviously wasn't available, and Ireland would have been starting Doris at number 8 and going with a replacement forwards pack of maybe like Ian Henderson or Ryan Baird plus or Cormac Isichuku. There was no standout number 8 as a there was no backup number 8, kind of like recognized number 8 in there. Is that something you think Ireland look at this week, where if, for example, we're saying starting back row probably Peter O'Mahony, Jack Conan and Josh van der Vleer, then you're looking at the bench, it could be maybe Joe McCarthy slash James Ryan, whichever one of them maybe doesn't start in a second row. Ryan Baird also in contention there. But is it possible that one of those doesn't start and you put in a Cian Prendergast or a Nick Timoney or a Gavin Coombs? Because I am wondering if, for argument's sake, Jack Conan pulls up with a hamstring 5 minutes into the match on Saturday, who is packing down at number 8?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because do you stay loyal now to Pete? Do you go look at Pete starts again, as you said, that back row you mentioned, Pete, Jack, Josh van der Vleer, or do you put Ty back to six and give Joe a start, with alongside James Ryan, and then what does your bench look like, or is it is it Ryan Baird and Joe McCarthy on the bench with Byrne starting in the second row and not bringing in Coombs or Timney or Prendergast? Like, you bring him into the wider squad, but you kind of keep your match day 23.
And then is it a, if you're doing that, we'll say, is it a case of you're saying to maybe a Ryan Baird or someone, look, if needs must, you're going to be
Yes.
just slotting in there at the back of the scrum?
Yeah, I think so. I think they like when you watch them train and you see all kind, it'll block every week around contingency, and there'd be no problem, I don't think, for Ryan Baird for the last 20 minutes to play ace. That's if they go with them. I don't know how happy they were or what they thought of his impact off the bench against Scotland, but yeah. See, the problem is Bart Coombs. Timney obviously can play eighth, and he's played eight before. But Bart Coombs, have no like for like. You don't really have an out and out eighth, and his face hasn't really fitted that well. I know he's back in this time, and his form has been good for Munster. But are they going to invest time in him? I would say, yeah. So be Prendergast or Timney, who's obviously back in. Look, I'd love to see Gav Coombs. I think I'd love to see him in. I just don't know. I don't know how much do the Irish squad believe that in time he'll replace, a Doris. But in fairness to him, all he's done for Munster is get his head down and just play well and play consistently. So I would love to see it. It'd be brilliant. But my gut tells me they might be a little bit more conservative and just move around some of those players that we've seen, do great jobs for Ireland. So, the Bairds, the Joe McCarthy's, etc., kind of staying in the match day 23. Joe obviously hasn't been in it because he's been injured, but him coming back in and actually getting back in there ahead of maybe trying to get a special number eight on the bench. That was kind of how I thought he might cut it up.
And Johnny, I think even if from Gavin Coombs' point of view, even if he isn't involved in a matchday squad this week, it's a big week for him to just be back in that building. Because it was interesting. There was obviously a bit of a scramble maybe late Saturday night or early Sunday morning when they were figuring out the extent of Caelan Doris's injury. I was down in Thomond Park covering Munster and the Scarlets on Saturday evening, and we asked Ian Costello after the match, Gavin Coombs had a great game this week. I'm sure he'll be hoping to be involved with the Ireland A's. Now, from what I gather, those who were involved with the Ireland A's had kind of found out a couple of days before the squad was announced, and Costello basically said that, it's a huge opportunity for Gavin going in with the Ireland A's this week. So obviously there was a bit of a scramble. He gets the call then, no, you're going up to the senior team. Now, there is still a possibility, and Mike Prendergast and Andrew Goodman said it yesterday that by the time Simon Easterby selects his squad tomorrow, 9 a.m., it's going to be announced. Some of the senior Ireland squad will be made available for the Ireland A's on Sunday. He could be one of them. Who knows? But regardless, for someone who's been striving since the World Cup to just get his foot back in the door of that building, it has been a big week for him, and for someone like John Hodnett as well, and Nick Timoney, who's been in and out of the squad.
Yeah, I think for Gavin in particular, he hasn't been in there for a bit. And with the summer that's coming up, this is a huge week to show that even if he doesn't get in this week, the summer is his kind of thing, So that's what I'd be thinking in terms of Gavin Coombs. And it's great to see him back in. Like, obviously, for a fella like that who really plays well for his province and, even his stats, I know it's not all about tries, but like his try scoring record is a joke. And he does a lot more work than that. He's had to put his head down a good few times, even within Munster. He's gotten, left out of a squad or two, and he's had to put his head back down again. So he's got a lot of resilience, but he's got a lot of power as well, And it's not like for like, but you can definitely build a back row around him with the skills that Ireland have. So I think it's huge for him going forward. I'm not sure with the length of time he's been in camp, Ireland don't tend to do those things. So I don't see him being selected this week. But even
But you could end up being needed as like the 24th man, so that's where you could end up falling between the stools of senior squad and A's.
Absolutely, but I think Bert is right. I think he's going to stick to his personnel unless he. I don't think going to Wales with those changes and the uncertainty. I think it might have just put the brakes on some of the changes that they might have made. I think if there was no change, the certainty, the ability to preview them, I think would have been a lot easier to maybe make your three or four bigger changes. I don't think there'd be as much of an appetite when you see the kind of uncertainty over in Cardiff. But I think like Josh van der Fleer will easily go into eight if. It's very different setting out your team to know who's going to cover what. If there's a crisis, it's Josh van der Flerven in the hooker, so or throwing the ball anyway. So he's well able to adapt, and it's not beyond him. He's definitely played at eight, hasn't he? So just picking the ball off the scrum, and he's a good ball carrier and everything else. So that could be the change and keep Ryan Baird at like six or seven, So they definitely have loads of options. But again, you can't. You we I can't. Well, Birch might have more info, but I definitely don't know what they're doing in training in terms of people swapping around. And but the pool of players, I don't think will be massively different. I think he'd have to set out a stall in terms of I think Cian Prendergast would be a great fellow. I think Cian Prendergast or Nick Timoney would both get on the bench ahead of Gavin Coombs quite easily because of, Prendergast has played eight with Connacht. He covers six very well. He's been in that squad a long time. Timoney's the one that has been probably well, he's probably got the he's been in the camp so long without getting that carrot of playing. I
He's
think
been in squads more recently than Coombs is probably the way of putting it,
definitely ahead of Coombs. He definitely get
yeah.
ahead of Coombs in terms of selection, I would say, and he could be the one as well.
Just on that, it's my understanding that Ireland kind of led the way for Prendergast to play more at eight, over the last 18 months, that they felt that that was an added string to his bow and a position that he could develop in. So that would tie into it then. If you say you leave Pete out or whatever, and you start Ryan Baird at six, then maybe a Prendergast. If Pete goes to back out of the squad for the 23, which I don't think they probably will, but Prendergast could get the nod ahead of Timoney just because he obviously has a better line-out profile. They can use Josh as that breakout player that Timoney's is so good at. And age-wise as well, obviously he's a little bit younger. But yeah, just for Johnny, I think we're expecting players who've been in before, and Timoney has been in more recently than Gavin Coombs to be a little bit further ahead in the pecking order. But I think for Coombs getting in ahead of Max Deegan, I think was a step forward. And I know Munster fans will be thinking, no, of course he should be, but just Deegan's been playing quite well for Leinster. Obviously, he can play six or eight. And I just think Gavin just needs to make incremental steps back. And I actually think he'd be better off if he's not going to be in the 23. To actually go play A's then,
Oh yeah.
and show what he can do, rather than have someone else come in that A game and just catch the coach's eye. So yeah, it'll be interesting how it unfolds. But the great thing for him is he's playing well, and the summer tour this year, there's going to be a lot of Irish back rows away, and that could be his chances again to show how he's changed as a player and listen to the feedback he's got.
I think you'd like to see the big change. I think just to caveat the conversation about them probably not making changes, they'll stick to the 23. You'd love to see, I wouldn't like to see Pete out of a squad, but if Ireland are very confident and brave in their selection going to Wales, my point really is that Pete doesn't need to be in that selection for them to win the game. I think his leadership might be important now with Doris out and everything else, but for Easterby, he surely is confident enough of going to Wales with that pool of players, with a Cian Prendergast on the bench, with everything he has at his disposal, and still winning that game comfortably enough if they back themselves.
Would the argument for, well, one of the arguments for keeping O'Mahony in the side be that he probably does actually need the minutes more than some other players because he's had a few injury problems this season. He didn't feature against England because he just wasn't there yet in terms of his match sharpness. So he's only just, one game back into this campaign as well. There's a strong case to be made that you probably actually need him as much for himself and his minutes as much for the leadership as well.
Leadership, yeah. Pete, at this stage of his career with minutes, I'm not really sure. I think he could plug in. I wouldn't be overly worried about that. I don't manage him, so I have no idea. But from the outside looking in, it doesn't really look like he needs to have a load of minutes to play well. I think he's one of those players that can just plug in when he's needed,
Yeah, I would say that I would agree, Johnny. I think that block of game time he got against Scotland will last him for a while. You know what I mean? He knows his own body. They know how he what he operate what he needs to operate. He'd be absolutely fine. So I don't think that'll be a factor in it. It's just whether they feel his skill set is important in terms of how they want to go and attack Wales or stop Wales.
Few other selection bits and pieces to tidy up before we move on. Like there actually are plenty of calls that Easterby can make and viable options. We mentioned Joe McCarthy potentially coming in and being available. You'd expect him to either be on the bench or in the starting team anyway to get some game time. Then you have does Mac Hansen come back in for Calvin Nash, who performed perfectly well against Scotland after coming in late? Does maybe Gary Ringrose come in for Bundiaki and just rotate that midfield around, give Aki a weekend off and get some more minutes into Ringrose? Does Jamie Osborne maybe come in at full back for Hugo Keenan? Does Jack Crowley come in? And then something on the bench. Obviously, you're probably assuming Gus McCarthy's stepping up to the hooker spot on the bench, but does Jack Boyle come in and try get some minutes into him then as well? There are changes that can be made to the team, and there will obviously be at least two, but there are other changes that can be made, Johnny, where you could say, like, it wouldn't come across as sweeping changes or disrespectful changes, that, you know, they wouldn't necessarily be weakening Ireland in any way.
So I'd love to see Jack Boyle. I think that's a huge one. I think the selection, like without being arrogant about it, Simon Easterby will be looking at what's his best team to play against France. And like if he thinks that Mac Hansen's ceiling is higher or his ability at the moment is higher than Calvin Ash, like Calvin will play against both teams and play well. But if he thinks that his selection ideally is Mac Hansen in better form, then I think you'd see Mac Hansen this weekend. So I think there'll be a little bit of two game planning within this one. I don't think it's going to be well, we all know it's not going to be a flat out selection for Wales, but I think it's a two gamer. With the centres, I do think, Robbie Henshaw, Gary Ringrose is the selection. We know what Bundiaki can do. I suppose we know what they all can do, but you're trying to find that centre partnership for France as well. None of them are going to weaken you. I don't think Wales, like it's hilarious. There's a young fella there, Dan Sheehan, as well. He'll come back in. Imagine Wales looking at that. It's like, Ronan Keller is injured. They'll actually be like, some danger nearly like, oh, I wish he wasn't injured because they might actually keep going with him because
Yeah,
otherwise.
it's Ireland lose Kelleher and Dáras on this hand, and then you turn around and say, oh no, but we're putting in Dan Sheehan and Jack Cohn.
It's a disgrace. Like, but yeah, you can pick any of I don't know if they'll take Hugo Keenan out. I think they'll keep consistency there. I think they'll choose one of Calvin Ash and Mac Hansen, obviously. I think they will go with Henshaw and Ringrose. I'd love to see Jack Boyle on the bench. I think that has to happen for this one. I'm not sure how many Gus McCarthy will be on the bench, you'd assume. And then we already spoke with that kind of back five, the options that they have. But I do think it's going to be very much about what he wants to play against France, who needs the minutes, who does he need to get an answer on, and there'll be a bit of kind of forward planning with this one.
Any thoughts on those, Bernard?
Yeah, I'd like Nash to go again. But obviously, I understand what Johnny's saying completely, that it really depends if you feel it's important Mac plays for France. But Nash has been top class for Ireland. I think Jack will come on the bench. I think it's really important we do that, even
Boyle.
if he, Jack Boyle,
Jack
sorry,
Boyle,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, Jack Boyle, I think he'll come onto the bench and he'll have a front row bench of Jack Boyle, Gus McCarthy, Thomas Clarkson, you know, which three young, exciting players, Gus and Thomas, Tom Clark, Thomas Clarkson, have already tasted international rugby and have done well. Jack will be just on cloud nine after last weekend against the Ospreys, you know, getting decent game time, be part of a good scrum, a Leinster scrum against a good Ospreys scrum. And we have to just look at that. Keane Healy, I think, will come back onto the bench if he misses out this week for France, you know, and maybe Italy. But it's just a great opportunity to have a look at Jack. I'd love to see the halfback swap, and I know we're getting in. If you do that, you're into quite a few changes. But I think Jack Crowley and Conor Murray starting with Prendergast and Gibson Park finishing isn't a weakness either, you know. I think both of them could come up could do a cracking job. Both are quality players, and especially when if you have Robbie and Gary and Hugo and James Lowe and Nash, you know, it'll be a very, very good back line. And I think it'll be a real show of faith from Easterby, you know, and not disrespectful to Wales in any way. It's just this is the game that I think Ireland would always look at bringing some of those bench players in. So I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah, it will be really interesting to see what the team is, as I said, named 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. On the contest itself, so it's a funny one. Like, I personally, and I'd say a lot of people would agree as well, I don't think Wales are good enough to win this weekend, but I do think with the changes they're making, we're assuming like Gareth Anscombe coming in at, you know, actually playing an out half at out half, Max Llewellyn probably in the centre as well. Maybe a bit more feel-good factor about them, the likelihood they might chuck the ball around and throw caution to the wind, swing for the fences, whatever, a little bit more. Well, I don't think they're good enough to win. I think they've more than enough potential to give Ireland a bloody nose at times and sow a few seeds of doubt into them ahead of the France game. And I think back to when the sides met in 2024, Johnny, and also in round three in that middle week with breaks either side, Ireland won 31-7, didn't get those two tries to seal the bonus point until the last 15 minutes. And discipline fell apart in the middle third of the game. It was a sloppy overall performance. And I think with the benefit of hindsight now, you look back and see they weren't really sharp in that game and they were so slow off the mark 2 weeks later against England as well. Like, this, you'd assume Ireland are going to win this weekend, but they still have to go in and have the right attitude and not allow Wales put those doubts into them.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to come out of the blocks and just finish the game like in the first half by any means. Like, this is international rugby as well, so I think with the pride that Wales have at home, the changes that they'll make, the bounce that they might get from that. Like, the only thing about the bounce, I would say, the bounce will give you a load of kind of mental energy, I would say, but it might not give you the level of detail that you need, you know, in a week of trying to change things. You can't change too much, but you change certain things, and then will people be on different scripts? Like, so they might have a little bit of an issue with some of the details around things, but the mental energy will cover that over. Like, you know, you get a lot of motivation, and it takes a while for that to dissipate, you know. So I think with being at home, with the reaction, with the changes, with the crowd getting with them, I do think they're going to be very sticky. Like, I don't foresee it being very easy, and I would say that it'll be very similar to that. Like, I think the final quarter is when teams really separate themselves, especially when there is a gulf in quality, I would say. Like, there clearly is, you know, that's being objective, you know. But I do think with Garrett Anscombe coming back in, like having a general back at 10, a fellow who hasn't been involved in the shitstorm, so to speak, like he'll just come back in fresh and not too fresh. I know he's been involved, but like he hasn't been around that, so. I don't think they'll be. I think they'll change their front row quite a bit. Like, Nicky Smith causes awful trouble in the scrum.
He's been really good, yeah.
Yeah, you know. So they'll definitely get something out of that and a few selection changes. There'll be a lot of questions asked of Ireland, but they just have to stay patient. It could be ugly at times. I think they will. Well, I obviously think they'll get there, but they're going to have to stay with it, stay patient, and not make too many assumptions. Like, but you've mentioned that a couple of changes can sharpen your focus on that. Too many changes will make you a small bit more ragged, I would say, but a couple of changes and a little bit of you know, uncertainty going over there, I think it'll put a small bit of fear into the back of your mind, and teams are generally good when they have to fear what might happen, you know.
Yeah, and Bernard, like I'd say, the only real complacency is coming from maybe some supporters or some sections of the media, where you look at the playing group, and we were speaking to Robbie Henshaw, for example, yesterday. He was up doing a media session, and he had to remind us he's never won a Six Nations game away to Wales in Cardiff. He's played there 3 times, and he's lost all three. He wasn't playing 2023 the last time they'd won there. He was out injured at the time. Ireland have only won twice in Cardiff in the Six Nations since the Grand Slam game in 2009. This hasn't been a good place for Ireland to go across the last 10, 15 years, and the players are obviously well aware of that.
This is obviously an incredibly difficult place to win historically, and unfortunately, that's what probably disappointed most people in Welsh rugby is just how they've allowed the Principality to become an easy place to play, and obviously they're on a 14 match losing run, but I think they've been underperforming. I think unfortunately for Warren, it looks like his message had stopped sinking in. We know there's a player review in November. The players were quite critical of the management, and there wasn't really drastic change going into the Six Nations. So Alex King lost his job, but Rob Howley stepped up. So it wasn't anything new. I think they've had a lot of kind of the same voices during that 14 match unbeaten run, or loss, consecutive losses, and it needed a change, and it couldn't have got anybody better for a short-term solution than the interim coach Matt Sherratt. So he's one of the most popular men in Welsh rugby. He's worked with a lot of these players through his time in Cardiff, Bristol,
That's
the
it's
Ospreys.
no mean feat to begin with to be a popular man in
No,
Welsh rugby.
it's incredible. It's incredible. His first week as head coach of Cardiff, he had 8 players contracted in the car park. You know, he's had to maybe not deliver the news, but He's had to sit down and I suppose talk to players who are being let go because of budget cuts, reduced salaries because of funding issues. I mean, he's been in a shit storm for the last 3 or 4 years in Welsh rugby and still is well liked and trusted. So that's a testament to him. And I think the WRU, they have gone for someone obviously internal, but who can create the type of energy that, to be fair to Gatland, worked so often for them. You know, like if you think of Gatland's methods, it was big physical players, which he had in abundance at the time, an unbelievable defense and incredible fitness levels and energy. I think they've still pushed hard in the fitness levels, but Gatland would say that, you know, he saw at the World Cup how they could get better improvements by being in camp for a long time, but at regional level, he hasn't been able to have that influence. So that's probably has dropped off a little bit. But what Matt Sherratt will do is they'll have real clarity in how they want to play. Like he won't overcomplicate it. His Cardiff teams generally, nearly on average, score one try a game from a set piece launch or a power play. So he's very good at finding a weakness in the opposition. They play fast. There'll be quick taps. He'll generally have a couple of trick plays around the line out just to get them on the front foot. And there are little things that he can probably implement quite quickly, you know, with lots of walkthrough sessions. Apparently, they've been doing a lot of that this week. A lot of clarity sessions, a lot of walkthroughs. Very simple messaging. Three things we need to do to beat Ireland. From a Welsh point of view, three things we need to do to stop Ireland. And that's all they're talking about. He's brought in a guy, TRT Thomas, seconded him in from Gloucester. And basically, he's like an energy coach. I had him in Dragons. Like, you've never met a more positive person in all your life. As honest as day is long, and they work together in Cardiff. And effectively, he's come in as skills coach, but you won't improve a player's skill set in a week or in a Six Nations dramatically. But you can improve the atmosphere around a camp. I spoke to someone who's in camp, and they said bringing back in the likes of Max Llewellyn, Chicken Anscombe, Jared Evans, and a few other new faces has just given everyone a bit of a lift. He'll either go with obviously a strong Gloucester combination, Thomas Williams, Garrett Anscombe, Max Llewellyn, which is, you know, in the centre. Or if he goes Jared Evans, he's coached him before, you know, gets on very well with him. And Wales, by having a 10, a proper 10, will automatically be 10% better, I think. You know, like in fairness to Ben Thomas, like Matt Sherratt never picked, very rarely picked Ben Thomas as a 10 for Cardiff. He leave him as a ball playing inside centre. You get Elliot Dee, I think, is going to come back in into the front row. Mickey Smith, if he starts. And suddenly, with a few selection changes that are more obvious and are there for the short term rather than what Gatland was talking about was long term. And you create a bit of a feel-good factor. They believe in your methods and you simplify the game plan to a certain extent. And you get a crowd excited by playing quick taps and a few trick plays, get you on the front foot. It suddenly then becomes a cauldron again. And are they good enough to win? It's highly unlikely. Based on what we've seen, no. But I think they're far more of a threat because of what's happened. And this may peter out. I'm not saying like they may end up back at the same level they were under Gatland. But probably the most dangerous opponent to be is Wales' first opponent after a change like this. So I think it's changed the game. I know the handicap is about 20 something points. And we may end up there, but I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as tepid a performance as we saw in Italy from Wales or in France from Wales this year, where they just looked totally down on self-belief and confidence.
Yeah, and Johnny, I think that last point is the important part for what I seem to be reading and hearing out of Wales over the last week or 10 days is that if they do lose to Ireland, it's not the end of the world, but they kind of want to lose. They want to go down swinging, ultimately. They don't want to go down limply as they did against Italy or barely even landing a glove on France in the opening round. I think most of the Welsh rugby public are fairly self-aware of where the sport is in their country at the moment, and they know they're not up among the best in the world anymore, but they are probably at a better level on paper than they should be higher than they are at the moment, if you get my drift.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm not sure who in Wales will say we'll definitely win this. There's going to be people that will say there's a bit of hope there with some
Yeah.
change, but I don't think anyone in their right mind would say we'll definitely win it. So in that case, you know, you'd like to lose if you're going to lose in the right way. and show that there is something changing going forward, and then bring a bit of hope back into their last two fixtures, you know. So absolutely, like there should be a different energy. And that's why I say the crowd will get behind them, because if they feel that from the start, and obviously selection, there can be different changes that will give them hope that things have changed, you know. And I think that that'll be a massive buzz around Cardiff on at the weekend. So but I do think, you know, just to go back, it's a very interesting thing. Gatland, Bert, you kind of said it there, that Gatland went for this transition to other players. Like, he obviously just jumped the gun. I don't know what the idea was around not kind of having this hybrid selection to bring people in. Like, we talk about it a lot that Ireland don't do it, and there's a criticism around Ireland because they don't just blood new players all in one go. But here is the case study why you don't do it. Like, you know, so there's a reason why Ireland goes slowly. Too slowly for some people, obviously, but we're at a certain level that we can, you know, we expect to win every week. And that is the case study why you do it. You don't just blood, like, Ben Thomas at 10 in France, you know, for no reason at all when he hasn't played there. Just look how it works out, you know. So you put them in amongst a strong selection, and you develop them that way with a bit of care, like, you know. And I think that just should resonate with us when we think about, you know, what Ireland could pick this weekend and what they should pick are two very different things, because we need continuity and we need to protect the players' performance and see what they're actually like amongst a strong squad.
Well, I think Johnny, I think Gatland was always a fairly decent selector, you know, and he picked players who could play his system. I'd say. And he's wrote a column in the Telegraph today, and he's kind of half. He tries to explain his reasoning behind it, but I think that'll be the one that'll irk him for the rest of his career. Is just, and in fairness to Ben Thomas, it's like the Welsh 10 jersey is a kind of a mythical jersey. I mean, the players of the past. It's always. It's, I know our own is quite important or whatever, but to ask a youngster to go into a team who've lost 12 in a row and to go to Paris. And you have all this negativity around a review from November, a very tough November results-wise. I said 12 in a row, and you're going to Paris, and you're not playing 10 for your club. It's a horrible. It's nearly doing disservice to the player, isn't it? And like you'd like to be able to put them into an environment where they've got loads of confidence around them, loads of stability of the structure, and they're playing. A similar type of brand that they play with their club. Like Prendergast, it was easy for Prendergast to step into Ireland in November, you could argue, because so many Leinster players around him, he's confident, etc. But if you don't have that environment, you know, maybe you're better off not letting them play that early, you know, wait till there's an opportunity to blood them differently. And I think Wales has said, you know, it's going back full circle, whether it's Jared Evans or whether it's Garrett Anscombe. They straight away will be better, and that's obviously something that Simon Easterby will be very well aware of, and that's why I think this game is more interesting now than it was, you know, last week after the Italy loss, when Gatland looked like he was still going to finish out of Six Nations.
So that's 2:15 kickoff on Saturday afternoon, Wales against Ireland at Principality Stadium in Cardiff. Live commentary on RTÉ Radio 1. Ireland A's, I might touch on that briefly as well. They're playing Sunday against England A at Ashton Gate in Bristol. So many opportunities and so many enjoyable narratives to look around at this game, because with a Lions tour in the summer, we're obviously expecting a healthy Irish contingent to be going away on that. There's an enormous opportunity for players in this Ireland A squad at the weekend who have limited enough, probably provincial experience, to get an opportunity to earn a senior cap for Ireland this summer. Interesting as well to see who drops down from the senior squad. Obviously, as we mentioned, Coombs, Hodnett, Timoney, Dearmon Mangan as well, who we haven't spoken about, and we might touch on him now as well, along with Stuart McCloskey and Jacob Stockdale, all went into the senior squad as well. A question to maybe tee us up on this topic from James Broderick on X this morning. Has the pathway into the Ireland senior squad changed with provincial appearances moving down the pecking order for emerging Ireland tour and under 20 performances, with Mangan full squad, Gus McCarthy and Hugh Cooney in the development squad getting calls with six or less pro games under their belt? So I suppose, is he kind of saying, is David Humphreys slash Andy Farrell, are they looking at what players are doing in the under 20s and emerging or Ireland A setups maybe a little bit harder than what they're actually looking at in terms of what a player is doing for their province week in, week out? Are they kind of making their own decisions rather than just letting the form guy dictate them?
You're probably thinking of, like, I'm just thinking on the spot there now when you're saying that. Like, you pick Munster players from what might happen in the AIL, but you pick your academy players. You don't pick the best of the AIL players, you know? So, like, is it something kind of similar to that? Because I think it's a great question, and I think there's a definite shift because they're looking at ceilings and who can play their system, and there's time spent playing their system ish at under 20 level, definitely at A and Emerging Ireland level, and there's been a very clear objective around that, you know? So I think it's the pathway that they're being very clear on, the ceilings of players, the potential of players, and who they might like to develop into their senior squad going forward. So I think it's definitely happening. I don't think you can question that, can you?
Yeah, and Bernard, like I think as well, from what I would have heard over the last couple of months, there's definitely been a swing to look at the kind of crop of under 20s from this really, really impressive generation over the last 2 or 3 years of under 20s teams and try get them more involved in the provincial game at senior level as well, but also to just get them into Ireland senior camps or emerging Ireland squads. And essentially just have a look under the bonnet and see what's there, kick the tires on it and get some face time with these younger players. Because I do feel that over the next few years, what we're hearing from the IRFU is that they're probably moving away from really, really honing in on winning like Six Nations under 20s titles and looking maybe at the French and English models a bit more closely, where they're probably not performing as well in the under 26 Nations because their players aren't available to them as much because they're actually getting game time with their clubs on a weekly basis as well.
Yeah, I actually think it's even younger than their 20s, Neil. I think some of those players, it's what they've done in school and the reputation they have. It means that Andy Farrell, Simon Easterby, Paul O'Connell are already keeping an eye out for them, you know, so they don't have to do as much in a provincial jersey. Like I'm biased towards Mangan because I know him from school, from Newbridge.
Tell us a bit more about him, actually,
Yeah, so
because
he was on the same team as.
as people have pointed out, we haven't seen a huge amount of
Yeah,
him. He only has a handful of
and
games for
so
Leinster.
I think he's a great example of someone who is in an Irish squad, not based on provincial form, you know. And that's not knocking the games he's had for Leinster or whatever, but it's based on the overall reputation and potential that I think a lot of people feel he has. So he was on the same cup team as Prendergast. 5th year they got to a final, but it was whenever it never played because COVID, so they shared it with Clongo. So they were. But they're both exceptional. They were exceptional. He's very similar to Prendergast in terms of from a military background, a real leader, incredible ability to just take on information and implement it. So that's and he's obviously quite athletic. He's played six. He's back in the second row at the moment, but he can play both. Very physical, big, strong lad. Went to UCD. And yeah, like Ireland in the 20s, obviously emerging Ireland, and it looks like he's just been plucked from kind of you know obscurity. But my point is that Gus McCarthy, Hugh Cooney, Sam Prendergast, Dermot Mangan, in school, if you knew them, you'd be saying, look, they have a ceiling that's higher than a lot of the other fellas, even fellas who are above them in under 20s, if you get me. And I think that's what you're seeing now. So. Especially in Leinster, where it's hard to get game time, they maybe don't need to play as much for Leinster. But when they play, it's important that they confirm what's been said about them or where they are kind of in a depth chart that we obviously don't get the chance to look at. But when you see someone like Mangan get brought into the senior squad this week, you know, you don't be rocket science to think he's been, you know, on the depth chart somewhere, and obviously maybe his age profile. You know, obviously Henderson's the other side of the coin. So, and that's Henderson. Henderson is obviously important for here and now, whereas Mangan may not need it now, but would be important for the future. So that's what I think is happening now, and that's what a good talent ID program does. I mean, you can't, even though you want to trust your provincial coaches. Ideally, there's a bigger picture here where you're getting information from what your provincial coaches are telling you, what they're showing you with the selections, what those players are then showing you when they play. But also outside of that, there's the whole club game. So Mangan would have played a lot for UC, as I said. I spoke to some people in Clontarf, and they reckon Cooney has Unbelievable potential, you know, and that would fit in what I saw in school. But like he hasn't played a huge amount for Leinster either. But if he has an upside or a skill set, that means he will be a Leinster player in the future or another provincial player in the future of high quality. Well, then it's great to see opportunities like Ireland A, like extended senior squads, summer tours, emerging Ireland, just fit into that pathway as such in different ways. You know, other players will go and play every week for the province, and that's Cian Prendergast is a good example of that, where obviously, you know, there wasn't a position for him in Leinster Academy. He went to Connacht, and he's used regular provincial game time to push his case forward. You know, and that's in a country with whatever 150 odd pros, we kind of need to be, as we are being, a little bit more creative in terms of how we find talent and how we develop it.
Yeah, young Ian Henderson actually, I think, is a good comp for Dermot Mangan. Would you've crossed paths with him much through Cork on UCD, Johnny? And obviously, like you probably have crossed paths with a lot of this under 20s crop over the last few years. I know you've spoken about James McNabney and Jude Postlethwaite, how impressed you've been with them coming through. And as we said, this isn't just a Leinster thing where you've got the likes of Evan O'Connell, who's in an Ireland A squad this week as well, Brian Gleeson, who's been getting loads of game time at Munster, Ruaidhrí Quinn as well. You're going right around the four provinces, and this crop of under 20s are being fast tracked through. Talk to us though what you've seen with Mangan from dealings, games against UCD in the AIL.
Yeah, it's very interesting for someone at my level because I actually have seen a lot of them play games against us, and that's who we're trying to preview and see who they have available week to week. They're all the players that might or might not be available, and UCD have a cohort there that are very dangerous, like Andrew Osborne would be another one. But Dermot Mangan is definitely one. So he has played at second row, which surprised me, but he's obviously a bit of power in the engine room, and his ability at eight, he's a big ball carrier. He scored a try against us under the posts, I think just before half time in our home game before Christmas, and of course it was him galloping under the sticks. But Bernard said that he's a physical boy. He's got he's chunky, he's athletic, but he's got big old arms on him. He's a strong boy, so he's definitely an exciting prospect for Ireland to develop him. But yeah, like I've seen a lot of Hugh Cooney, unfortunately. He had an intercept against us 2 seasons ago. I think the day we won by a point in the end, maybe, and this seems to go either way with us in Clontarf. But Hugh Cooney kind of sparked the revival there with an intercept. We were playing too much rugby on our 10-meter line, and he intercepted it and scored under the post, and that was the revival. Eight Sal King with a big climb on a restart and got them back into the game for a last ditch attempt. But I was kind of more surprised by the Hugh Cooney one because of what I've seen with Jude Postlethwaite. I thought Postlethwaite is just like he's so unique. He's like, and I don't want to insult anyone, but like Stuart McCluskey with even more athleticism. It's like the long arms for the offload. He's a big poach threat with those long arms as well. But and he's well able to play ball, very physical when he wants to be. So
Postlethwaite, actually, he was name checked by Mike Prendergast yesterday, when he was doing a bit of media, as when he got out onto the training pitch and stood beside him, he was kind of nearly taken aback with how big and physical Postlethwaite is.
I think that's why I've been talking about him, because I've just seen it. We gave them a good go last game, round 18 last year, and I think it was that game. I might get my games mixed up, but he was a real standout for them when we got a couple of early tries, but he was a pain in our side, and it's just because of the unique, like Hugh Cooney is a class player, speed, agility, ball playing ability. I just think the uniqueness of Jude Postlethwaite. But anyway, yeah, I've seen loads of them. You see him across the AIL if you watch AIL week to week, and I think that's the give the AIL a little bit of a plug. You see these players all the time, and look at where they're stepping up to. They genuinely play with their clubs week to week, and the availability I think has gone up, especially in Munster anyway. But the availability has definitely gone up, and when you see them, you see how close people are to that standard. Obviously, they do things on a consistent level all the time. They have a little bit extra, but they're rubbing shoulders with guys like in the AIL week to week.
Great. That's a great selling point for the AIL, actually. If you go out and watch every weekend, and you can be the person when someone gets called up to a squad, and all your friends are going, "Who's this fella? What's he doing?" You can be like, "Well, actually, I've seen him play a good bit now over that." That's the way to
So
do it. Brilliant.
one of my good friends now, his dad is mad keen on college rugby, and He loves going to UCD. My friend lives near UCD, and he's always over in UCC as well. He loves college rugby, but you actually see these guys coming through all the time. That's the rugby he follows, and there's a reason for it, you know.
Just on Mangan, I don't think he's going to be. I know he's played a lot in the back row. I think what they see is a George Martin type lock or a James Ryan, a tight head lock who just goes around
Who
bashing.
can play in the back row?
Yeah, but goes around bashing people, and I think
Was that
that
right?
they've obviously compared him to. They've obviously gone and done a run on what's a year older, what's a year younger in that space, and probably felt, it worked best a bit of time in him for that because we don't produce that type of player. I know Joe McCarthy is unusual, and he's a diff. I still see him as being different. Obviously, he goes around and plays whacking people, but he's nearly more explosive. But I think if there's someone, if you can have a couple of them in the system, just bubbling along underneath, it's a nice luxury to have. And I think that's what they see in him. He does lots of good things well, but I think that's where they could see him kind of prospering down the road.
Yeah, so that game Sunday afternoon, have to say, really, really looking forward to seeing that and just kind of seeing how everyone gels together because there's quite a few players that have no experience of playing together as well. That's always the fun part of these matches. Back to the men's Six Nations though, England, Scotland, 4:45 on RT2 and RT Player. We'll quickly get through these last couple of games. This match, Johnny, has the potential to change a narrative of a tournament massively because England are obviously coming in on a high. If they win again, they're absolute live contenders to win a title based on the bonus points they've picked up, and they'll ultimately just be waiting for Ireland to slip up against France, and they're in with a real shot at winning a title. And then on the flip side as well, after the way they were pretty much bullied by Ireland a couple of weeks ago, there's massive pressure on Scotland now.
Yeah, there is, and I think has it been 3 years Scotland won that for
4 in a
that's
row.
four. Four. It's time for England to get that back, isn't it? And I think this will be the one, to be honest. Scotland were rattled obviously against Ireland, but then they came back. But yeah, I think the structure of England, the physicality, I think they'll play Finn Smith and he'll direct them around the place. I like Marcus Smith. The rugby is kind of seems easy on the eye for a neutral, but the Finn Smith thing is real, and I
You
do like it.
couldn't ignore what Finn Smith did against France. I completely agree there, yeah.
Even when you say it objectively, Finn Smith came in starting to beat France. Are you ever going to change that? You'd be silly. So I'd back England to turn that tide a bit.
Bernard?
Yeah, I don't fancy Scotland at all. I think I know they've won these, probably won the last four as underdogs, but
You were
no.
saying on a, you were like you were talking about this on Against the Head on Monday night, like Gregor Townsend's under pressure now.
No, massively, yeah, massively, and I just think physically, England will eat them alive. So yeah, I think this could be the end of a lot of Scotland's players' Lions hopes. Another poor performance by them, or being dominated by Alliance contributing team. I think the back row in particular, it's a massive one for Scotland because if they underperform again, that's it over. There's too much competition.
Yeah, I'd love to have seen Gregor Townsend's reaction on Sunday afternoon when Franco Smith, after the after Glasgow beat the Dragons, said, "Oh yeah, I'd love to get back into international rugby someday." Oh,
Yeah.
I'd say he loved that one. Last one then, Italy France Sunday afternoon. Drew last year, and Italy really should have won if it wasn't for that kick that hit the post at the end. We'll cover this game through a question on X from Dara Crowley. Do you think France are showing signs that they're getting tired of the Sean Edwards defence philosophy? I feel like I haven't seen them defend accurately and cohesively since the World Cup. I'd nearly flip that as well and say, is Sean Edwards getting a little bit tired of dealing with those French players?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think Sean had a long time in Wales, and I remember at the end Gatland was kind of making him only be around camp a little bit because he was driving everyone mad. He was interfering in all kinds of parts of the game. Now he's phenomenal, and the success he had with Wales and with France has been incredible. But maybe that message. It's getting old. Maybe Galtier's message is getting old. I think there's big pressure on France now to go and at least be in the hunt going into the last weekend for the championship because obviously Fabian failed in a World Cup attempt and obviously last year they were poor. So another Six Nations of what a performance, given I think they have the best squad, you know, I think the best depth. So I think there's a lot of pressure on France. I think they'll beat Italy. But yeah, maybe there will be changes this summer for France. I'm actually not sure. I think Galtier, in fairness, has done a good job of bringing some stability to the whole thing. But he will come under pressure if, as I said, if they don't beat Ireland and go into the last weekend as contenders.
Johnny, I just think with them, not even just with Sean Edwards, but just in general, there's been such a World Cup hangover where you think about how much emotionally and physically they probably put into a World Cup on home soil and the way it ended. They've played well in fits and bursts since then, but they don't look like the same team as they were pre-World Cup.
No, there's definitely something there. Bert, did you say at one stage they just resourced that World Cup squad in terms of backroom team and everything? Just
Yeah.
so.
Yeah,
And
everything. And in
just.
fairness, he doesn't have, after the World Cup, he had to, people took pay because people got let go. No, everything was done. There was agreement reached with the clubs around player release. In fairness, for the first time, I think in my memory, the clubs forgot about their own kind of needs and put the country first. And unfortunately, it didn't lead to success.
I think that's what you're saying. Like, going back to the question, I don't know if it's Sean Edwards can take the brunt of what their energy is like. There's been a massive change in energy in French rugby, you know. So, a combination of many things, I'd imagine. But if that's the environment around the place and there's less help or less wages, and no matter what, like in an environment, if you were earning more money and now you're earning less, like you'd be better off earning less the whole time as opposed to getting cut, you know, and the energy might be different. So there's loads of different pieces kind of feeding into that. And if the mental energy is off, defensive energy is going to be following that, you know. So, but at the same time, did they pick their team at 7-1 split, or are they rumored to pick the team at 7-1 split? I didn't see that properly, but there's definitely an experiment going into Italy. But, you know, with Italy winning against Wales, and obviously they've caused France problems in the past, you could say that there'd be another problem brewing here, but I don't know. The French reaction, I think, will be strong, and I think it'll be fairly straightforward.
And it'll be even stronger in 2.5
Yeah.
weeks' time in Dublin as well. I said it last week. Like I'm actually feeling I'm perfectly comfortable criticizing France at the moment because I know that they probably will still come to Dublin, and that'll be a day that they're going to be on it. It's just the problem is they're on it and off it on any given day.
There's some crack to watch, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That is where we'll put a pin on this week's podcast. Thanks a million to Johnny and Bernard. Plenty of rugby coming your way across the RT channels. England and Scotland in the under 26 nations. That is Friday evening from 7:05 on RT2 and RT Player. England and Scotland as well in the men's Six Nations. Then Saturday, 4:15 p.m. coverage gets underway on RT2 and RT Player. And then live commentary on RT Radio 1 of Wales, Ireland. On Saturday, sport on RT Radio 1. And we'll have a live blog as well. I'll be doing that on rte.ie. We'll speak to you again soon.